This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and Anthony Brooks is out today. So here's how it's supposed to go. Couple meets, couple marries, couple has children, then children grow up, go off to college, strike out into the world on their own, and then those children form their own couples, and the cycle repeats. But recently, that cycle has been breaking down because more and more 20 and 30-somethings than ever are not leaving home, or they're moving back in with their parents. And our guest today calls them boomerang kids. PBS's NewsHour recently profiled one of them. Her name's Becky Schaefer, and she's a college grad who's moved back into the parental nest in Newton.
When I first moved home, I was like, okay, Becky, like 6 months, and then you're like not going to be here anymore. You're going to move out. And I feel like I'm getting a little bit complacent.
But Becky doesn't feel like she's the only one.
I would say that only one of our high school friends, one or two of them, have really gotten good full-time jobs.
And that's just the thing. The economy, thwarted ambitions, the ever-spiraling need for more education just to start a career, they're all monkey wrenches that are producing a profound cultural shift in many affluent nations, including right here in the United States. And it's the focus of Catherine Newman's new book, The Accordion Family: Boomerang Kids, Anxious Parents, and the Private Toll of Global Competition. Newman is a sociologist and dean of the School of Arts and Sciences at Johns Hopkins University. She joins us now here in the studio. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me.
So listeners, I think this might be familiar to a lot of you. What do you make of the idea of your adult children moving back in with you because they either want to or have to? Are you living in an accordion family? And if you're one of those 20 or 30-somethings that have had to move back home or decided to, why did you do it? What did you gain by living with mom and dad? What are you losing by living with mom and dad? And what do you think the long-term impact is on our society when an entire generation of adults who are not just young, but some of them approaching middle age, are still at home? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Now, Professor Newman, you stumbled upon this issue when you were traveling abroad, actually. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, I was traveling in Western Europe for business reasons. And when you're finished with the end of the day, you sit around and talk to the people you've come to visit. You talk about your family. What are your kids doing? What are my kids doing? And I found myself in countries like Spain and Italy with people about my own age who were saying, yes, my son, he's 35. He lives at home. I do his laundry every day. I clean his room. And when I recovered from my shock, and being a good social scientist, I tried to cover it, of course, and just said, well, that's very interesting. What is it like having your son at home at this age? I would often find the person on the other side of the table saying, well, why would he ever leave me? And I'm thinking to myself, ooh, if this were my kid, I would think something has really broken down here. And I did so much traveling during that period that I realized this was a phenomenon well worth writing about. It's a transformation in the way households are composed.
Well, in fact, in Italy, you write that 37% of men aged 30 have never lived away from home. And I mean, it's easy to sort of stereotype maybe some Mediterranean cultures as saying, oh, it's always been that way. They're all mama's boys. But I mean, it's such an issue that you write, the government of Italy is saying that they need to do something to stop this trend.
The government of Italy actually passed a law at one point that forbid people to live at home after the age of 18. It didn't go anywhere, but they were sufficiently distressed to try that. It has long been true that Italian families kept their children at home until they married. Mm-hmm. What has really changed is the age at which they marry. They are just marrying later and later and later. Some of them are not marrying at all. And here in a country where they were famous for large families, fertility is below replacement rate. Very tiny families. If you go to a playground in Italy on a sunny Saturday in the spring, you will not hear the sound of children's voices because there are very few children being born in Italy.
You've called it an evaporation of an entire generation.
It's true. And it's happening in Spain. It's happening in Japan. So these are countries that are aging quickly because they're not having as many children as they did before. And they're not particularly comfortable with immigrants. In the United States, we would look much the same if we didn't have a substantial immigrant population. And despite the fact that our politics around this wax and wane, we do have a large immigrant population, and they are having more children for at least one generation than the native-born. Otherwise, we would also look like a low-fertility country.
Well, I want to come to the United States in just a moment because we focused on one city in particular, which is probably very familiar to a lot of our listeners. But I do want to ask you about another culture, and that is Japan, because we're even seeing something very similar there. But the Japanese are reacting to this trend quite differently.
One of the things I found so fascinating is that exactly the same demographic pattern produces such different reactions. In Japan, this really is producing something close to a hysteria. There is tremendous anxiety. It stops the presses. It fills the nation's airwaves because they are convinced they produced a defective generation. And that I find amazing because nowhere in that explanation is there any room for a very well-known phenomenon, which is an economy that cratered about 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
We read about the lost decade. Now we're up to lost several decades in Japan. But when you ask Japanese parents, why are your children at home with you in their 30s? They never mention the economy. Whereas in Spain, it's the first thing they mention. So how people come to grips with why this has happened, how big a problem it is, who's to blame, that really varies from one place to another.
Okay. Well, here in the United States, you've written that since the 1970s, we've seen a 50% increase in the proportion of people aged 30 to 40 who live with their parents. And your test case for that is Newton, Massachusetts.
That's right.
Why Newton and what's happening there?
Well, I lived in Newton for 8 years when I taught at Harvard University, so I know the community a little bit. But actually, Massachusetts has one really huge advantage for researchers. There is an annual household census in every Massachusetts town. So if you want to see who lives in a household, you can look at that census, which is public record, and see that there are people with the same names that are in their 30s and in their 60s and pretty well figure out that you're looking at an accordion family. And so I use that record to try and locate people who look like they fit the bill.
Okay, and so what are they telling you? I mean, are families happy about this situation or not?
They are surprisingly happy about children returning in a different form than they left. So they are not coming back as teenagers who have to be told, do your homework, and I'm checking my watch to see if Janie's home at midnight. They are coming back in a slightly more autonomous form. So many of the most pleasurable aspects of parenthood are retained, and some of the worst aspects are jettisoned. You are not surveilling those kids in the same way. And so as long as they look like they're making tracks toward a different future, toward the kind of future everyone expected of them, then actually a period at home with mom and dad seems like it's very pleasurable.
I see. So as long as it's in service towards their children's continued development.
Yes. It is the family banding together to create the kind of professional future they always envisioned for Junior.
Do the children, I mean, I'm saying the word children, these are adults we're talking about. Do they feel the same way?
They do, in the sense that they don't see a great generational divide between themselves and their parents, which would not have been true in my generation. In my generation, there was such a huge gulf. The politics were a gulf. The cultural tastes were a gulf. Today, if you go to a Rolling Stones concert, you're as likely to see the room half filled with 20-year-olds and half filled with 60-year-olds. So the cultural gap between these generations has shrunk, and that means the feeling of being at home is not so painful. Mm. You can go out to the same movies.
Okay, so there might be a shrinking cultural gap, but there are very powerful forces. I mean, this is the purpose of your book, to talk about what's really making this huge societal change, not just in the United States, but many developed countries. I mean, the global economy seems to be one of them. I can tell you, even rocking around this building, we have a lot of super talented young people who are basically freelancers who can't find full-time permanent positions. And that's the reason why they have to live at home. They just can't afford to live on their own.
That's exactly right. So they may be upset and worried about the reasons why they're at home, but the actual experience of being there may actually feel like a very helpful safety net. Now, if it goes on too long, if it looks like they're not going to be able to graduate from this situation, that provokes tremendous anxiety. And it is true that there is tremendous concern about what the economy is doing to entry-level job opportunities, whether or not these internships are going to go on forever or you ever get to graduate to the kind of life that was routine in the past. Mm. Tremendous anxiety about this.
We have a lot of callers who want to join us, and I want to get to them in just a second. But I do want to ask you, you're a sociologist. The global economy is shifting in a way that we're probably never going to see it shift back. So we're on a trajectory now in one direction. What do you think the long-term impact is, at least here in the United States?
Well, the long-term impact is that we have aging societies. When you have an aging society, it tends to be less productive. If we have young people staying at home whose parents are using up resources they might need for their retirement, it has huge long-term consequences for what will be there for the parents. At the same time, those parents may feel sociologically younger. They're not becoming empty-nested. They're not becoming grandparents, and all those social stations that define elderhood aren't coming their way. But how long can this go on? How long can the family play the role of the major safety net? There are limits, and those limits will be felt in elder health care, in elder retirement prospects, and in younger people's inability to accumulate the kind of housing equity previous generations had. It will change the wealth profile of the country. Mm. It changes the demography. There is nothing left unchanged by this phenomenon, nothing.
Well, we're talking about accordion families, boomerang kids, anxious parents, and the private toll of global competition. It's a new book by sociologist Catherine Newman. They're banging down at the doors to get on the air, listeners are, so let's go to them. Christina's calling from Lexington. You're on the air, Christina.
Hi. I felt particularly compelled to call in because this hits home for me. I'm a college student, and I'm graduating, hopefully, in May. And myself, along with a lot of my friends, you know, are in that position now of trying to decide, are we going to move home or try to, you know, find a place? But I think the biggest problem is that it's not even easy to find, you know, small jobs to pay the rent, let alone career jobs. And I know a lot of people who graduated in the past couple of years, you know, who have had to move home. And I think the biggest thing that I've seen is that it really takes a toll on their self-esteem. You know, I think there's like a, it feels like a sense of defeat almost when you have to move back home. And I guess depending on your home life as well, going from living totally independently at school and expecting to go off and have a career and then having to move back home, I think it's like just a little bit depressing sometimes.
Christina, thank you so much for your call. Catherine Newman, I wanted to ask you about that. I mean, Christina sees it as a direct impact on her self-esteem. I also wonder what effect it has when, you know, in the decade of one's 20s, it's supposed to be a time where you're able to take more risks than ever. You're supposed to be able to experiment in terms of career mobility, where you want to live in the United States. What impact is it, does it have where we can't have a generation of people who experience those sort of major growth experiences?
It is a total transformation in how the life course unfolds. So was the Great Depression, and it lasted a long time. And I think this is going to last a long time. The pathway to maturity is going to look very different. For many people, it's exactly as the caller described. It's sort of depressing. They feel defeated. They feel responsible. And sometimes their parents aren't as understanding as we might want them to be that it was the economy stupid that did this to them. Instead, they turn around and say, why aren't you doing something, Johnny? Why didn't you find a job, Mary? The less they know about how the economy has shaped the opportunity structure, the more personalistic and moralistic they can be, and that does increase the stigma. But today, something like 85% of college students are headed home.
85%.
When it's that big, when it's that close to being universal, it's hard to hold any given individual responsible. I do think for one generation where it's such a sharp contrast with what they expected, that feeling of stigma will be there. But the example family in Newton that you pulled off of the TV broadcast, you know, everybody they know has done this. Mm-hmm. So could it be Becky's fault? Probably not.
Well, I want to get to another call, but there is a question lingering in my mind about this. I mean, Newton's a great example. It is a very well-to-do community. These kids have grown up in affluence. The other thing about being in your 20s or early 30s is that, especially if you're living on your own, you're going to have at least a small, maybe large decrease in your standard of living because you're not earning the salaries that your parents are after their 30-year-long career. Does that have something to do with this, that there's just maybe a generation of kids, a part of whom just say, I don't want to take that step back in lifestyle?
Definitely. I think there are tastes within generations. If you talk to people who were in the baby boom generation, They did give anything to be autonomous, meaning they didn't care if they wore blue jeans with holes or lived in pretty down market neighborhoods. They would not have been caught dead in their parents' house because they valued autonomy over everything else. I think they were probably an aberration. Mm. I think we've snapped back to where we were for a long period of time, and that began even in the 1980s, where the expectation of a level degree of comfort was more important than autonomy. And if you can't have both, you choose comfort over autonomy.
Well, on that note, someone calling themselves Wah writes on RadioBoston.org, spoiled, 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 get a job, restaurant work, part-time, etc. It contributes to society and builds character. Get multiple roommates and learn how to survive. I think we have some callers who might have a different perspective. Jesse's calling from Jamaica Plain. You're on the air, Jesse.
Hello, Meghna. Thank you for taking my call. And I would like to counter Waz's perspective and say that I think, as opposed to the aberrant baby boomer generation, I'm 26, and I'm of the generation in which I would love to, after I finish graduate school, I would love to move home, not only because it would be great to have my parents help babysit my kids while I'm off at work, but also because we can share resources, we can help each other start a farm, and I just think there's a lot of positive that can come from it, not just as something that one has to do.
Jesse, thank you so much for your call. Catherine Newman, your thoughts on that?
You know, I found this increasingly. Where I expected to see distress, I often saw families coming close together than they ever had been before. So necessity being the mother of invention, they often developed a sort of affection and bond because they're more equal. It's not like coming home to being surveilled as a teenager. They know each other now as common adults and can enjoy one another's company and be helpful. And if that translates into the way the family used to be structured, where the elderly are cared for by the middle generation, this may actually increase the proportion of older people who are cared for by their middle-aged children because they know them better, because they came home when they were in their 20s and became more like friends and supporters. There are now developers in California that are building houses that are specifically set up to handle multi-generation families. And it may be that that will be a positive in the long run. So there are definitely silver clouds out there.
Catherine Newman is a sociologist and dean of the School of Arts and Sciences at Johns Hopkins University. Her new book is The Accordion Family: Boomerang Kids, Anxious Parents, and the Private Toll of Global Competition. Dr. Newman, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, listeners, I'm sorry I couldn't get to a lot of you because we had a lot of comments, phone callers who wanted to be with us. Guest writes on RadioBoston.org, I'm 39. I make $120,000 per year as an engineer, and I'm quite autonomous. My parents offered me to move into their house, and in return, I can go to medical school and be a surgeon. So we'll see if Guest takes up that offer from his or her parents. Listeners, do let us know what you think and share your stories at RadioBoston.org. Coming up, Chopin Nocturnes plus trance music equals... Well, stay tuned and find out. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.